You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up tonight after 7, join NPR for coverage of day one of the Democratic National Convention. They'll be bringing live coverage and analysis all week in Philadelphia. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, a bill signed into law on Friday could change the way we look at addiction. Over the last year, Congress saw more than a dozen bills tackling opioid addiction. The Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act of 2016 was a blend of some of those bills, and after getting congressional approval, it was signed into law by President Obama.
The bill got support from Republicans and Democrats, and despite signing it, the president still expressed concern that the bill didn't go far enough. In a statement last week, Obama said some action is better than none, and that he was disappointed in Republicans for not allocating more funding for addiction recovery.
Becky Vaughn joins us now. She's the Vice President of Addictions at the National Council for Behavioral Health. Becky, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. I always appreciate shining a spotlight on this issue.
And before we get into the particulars of what this bill does, a lot of people have been paying attention to the tone it takes, the approach to opioid addiction. What changes in the way this bill tackles that issue?
Well, that is probably one of the biggest positive things about this bill. When we look back at the history of how addiction has been treated in the public policy world, it's mostly been a focus on many times the attitude that people are weak or immoral, and if they just stop, there wouldn't be a problem. We've looked at it from a criminal justice perspective, you know, more stringent laws, more mandatory sentences. And really, this is the first bill that we, freestanding addiction bill, that we've had come through Congress in over 30 years. So just the fact that the tone has changed to the recognition that this is a health issue, that it needs to be treated like a health issue, and that it can't be ignored anymore because being ignored has created this emergency situation.
Does treating it as a health issue, treating addiction as a health issue, work better? Does it ultimately give better results than treating it as a criminal justice issue or a moral issue?
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen over the years that you absolutely can't arrest your way out of this problem. We've tried that approach. It hasn't worked. You often put people who are addicted in prison. They come out addicted. They still don't get the services they need. But when you start looking at the research that NIDA, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and NIAAA, their alcoholic sister in terms of research, we recognize the brain changes. Out of that, we've had treatment modalities come about that are now best practices. They have evidence behind them. And we see people getting into recovery, living their lives, managing this chronic disease, and really being productive citizens, which is the way they always wanted to be, too. They're reconnecting with families. They have stable jobs. So we know that when you get people the treatment they need, that they can have a life in recovery.
You mentioned that we're in an emergency situation when it comes to opioid addiction. We've talked about this issue a lot here in Wisconsin. It's a well-recognized problem here. Can you set the national stage? How bad is this?
Well, it is bad. What has brought it to most people's attention at this point is a very sharp increase in the use of prescription drugs in a harmful way. There's a lot of good things about these prescription drugs when they're used appropriately, but when they're abused, they end up in a harmful way, and as a result, we've seen a sharp increase in the number of overdose deaths as a result. Now, for those of us who have been working in the field for a long time, we often see this as the drug du jour. We look back on the crack epidemic. We look back on methamphetamine. The real issue is addiction, and the fact that even today we're only treating about 20% of the people who need these services. Now, if we were doing that in a field like diabetes or hypertension, people would be outraged. But this has been ignored, and our prevention funding has been cut and slashed over the years. So many of our children and adolescents and young adults don't get the message about how dangerous these drugs are and understand what low-risk choices are when it comes to their use. And so as a result, we've got people, particularly adolescents, kids, and young adults, who think that these drugs have been approved by the FDA, so they must be safe. and they end up getting in trouble with them.
We're talking to Becky Vaughn from the National Council for Behavioral Health about new anti-opioid addiction legislation passed big bipartisan margin in Congress, signed into law last week by President Obama. On a practical level, what does this new legislation do, Becky?
Well, the good news is it really approaches it from a comprehensive kind of overview. We've had lots of bills that have been proposed over the years that almost look more like Band-Aids, trying to attack this piece or that piece. And because we took what the Senate started with and then all of the pieces that the House also was trying to address and pulled them together, we now have a bill that talks about what a framework and what the infrastructure should be for treatment, for prevention, for making sure there's support for recovery in the community, just like other people with chronic diseases get support. There is good infrastructure and authorized funding for reversing these deadly overdoses, making drugs like Narcan more available so that we save people's lives when they overdose. It also increases that access to treatment and makes it so that we can make better use of medications that are now available to help with treatment, something, you know, we haven't had in the past. It also looks at law enforcement and best practices in law enforcement so that they're not dealing with the same people over and over again, but instead getting them where they need to be to get help, and criminal justice reform in terms of how our courts are handling this and where people are going into drug courts and other diversion things, once again, to get them the help that they need instead of filling our prisons with them.
In signing this, President Obama released a statement saying, doing a little is better than doing nothing. He said he was very disappointed in the amount of funding, much less than he had asked for from Congress. Is this, even though there's a more comprehensive approach, given those funding levels, is this a Band-Aid?
You could call it that. Obviously, we are still very much advocating for this bill to basically be the authorization for funding, and now we need the appropriators to do their job and put the actual funds to make this happen. Yes, we absolutely applaud the president. He has proposed a $1.1 billion budget over the next 2 years in mandatory funding. We just want Congress to understand that while this infrastructure and the fact that they've put in great policies around nurse practitioners and physician assistants being able to help with this, we have to have additional funding to make any of this work. So we don't see this as the end. In many ways, we know this is a marathon. We've just kind of finished the 5K, and now we're ready to go on to the next leg of making sure that we now get funding in order to put these things into place.
Looking at some of the pieces of the puzzle here, you mentioned medication for treating people with opioid addictions. That includes medications like methadone. There's been some controversy in the past. People who advocate, I think, more of a 12-step approach have said if you're using methadone, you're not really solving the problem. Your organization, a lot of research, it sounds like, says, no, methadone really does work. Can you talk about the role medications like methadone play in beating addiction?
Absolutely. We found, again, when you look at this from the perspective of a health issue, there are all kinds of modalities to help people get into recovery. Not everybody does the same thing if they have diabetes. Some people manage it with diet and exercise. Some people need insulin. The important thing here is that we are making sure that all modalities and all things that can help people with treatment are available to everybody. And right now, they're not. Some people, it works just fine to use a 12-step approach. Other people actually use acupuncture. There are so many different modalities, but these new medications are important, and we want to make sure that nobody's denied being able to use them if between the person, the patient, and their practitioner, they determine that this might be something that can help them. Right now, we've had very little funding for these medications. Yes, there are some practitioners who feel like medications are not the way to go, but they are learning as everybody catches up with the research that in many cases, it makes sense for some people to use these, and we want to make sure they're available.
Well, that's on the treatment end. There's been a lot of focus on prevention lately and on the pipeline and away from prescription painkillers, opioid painkillers, to heroin or just addiction to the pain relievers themselves. What needs to happen at that level to prevent people getting addicted in the first place?
Well, and that's the other piece that's going on. There's several pieces on the prevention front. One is, as I said, prevention funding for very evidence-based programs that we have had in place for years and years for kids have been slashed, and we want to make sure those get put back in place at a community level and at a school level. But at the same time, our country is way out of whack when it comes to the number of opioids that are prescribed for pain relief. In many ways, doctors were under the, I think in some ways misguided, understanding that these opioids were good for chronic pain. We know now that they're particularly good for acute pain, short-term pain, but they're not so great for chronic pain. And so as a result, we have prescribed way too many. The CDC has now put out guidelines for doctors to begin looking at how they're writing these prescriptions, what patients are appropriate, what levels of pain are appropriate. And so we don't want to swing the pendulum back too far, because we know that people who have pain, these can be very useful drugs in helping them manage this, but we are wanting prescribers and patients both to understand when they're looking at how they're going to manage this that there are other options and that those options should be explored before we just automatically write a script.
We're talking to Becky Vaughn, Vice President of Addictions at the National Council for Behavioral Health. We're looking at a bill that President Obama signed into law on Friday that aims to treat opioid addictions as a health problem.
And we want to hear from you on this. Has addiction, especially opioid addiction, impacted you or maybe a loved one? And what do you hope to see from people providing treatment and rehabilitation? Call us at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Maybe you're in the healthcare field. Tell us how you feel about treating addiction as a chronic health problem. Call 800-642-1234.
We'll be back with this conversation. Maybe hear from you in just a moment here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with Becky Vaughn, Vice President of Addictions at the National Council for Behavioral Health. We're talking about a bill signed by President Obama on Friday that's aimed at treating opioid addiction.
You could join in at 800-642-1234. Has this been a problem for you or your family? Has someone you know been addicted to opioid pain medication or heroin? Is this an issue in your community? Are you seeing more and more cases of this? If you're a member of the community in healthcare, in law enforcement, what works? What doesn't? What would you like to see more support for? Maybe from the federal or state or local governments. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Becky, we've seen legislation here in Wisconsin, a state lawmaker whose own daughter actually has struggled with opioid addictions. He's taken the lead on a lot of new legislation here. Are you seeing that? Are you seeing states and local governments take the lead on this?
We are, and it definitely is not just a federal problem. We are looking, many states have said in law enforcement, they're looking to the federal government to help them understand kind of what they should be doing and what they can be doing. But it is important to recognize that the states play a role in this too, and the states have a responsibility to put more money into these things, because this is having an incredibly negative impact, not just on individuals who are struggling with this disease, but on their families and on our communities. So it's important that the states also realize they have a role to play. And it's across all of these different modalities, from prevention to treatment to recovery support, criminal justice. For example, we have prescription drug monitoring programs so that prescribers can look and see if somebody's been to another doctor trying to get a prescription, or a pharmacy can look and see what's going on. These are in every state and the District of Columbia, except one, but many of the states, they're not mandatory. And that was something that was in the original CARA bill that was taken out before it was passed. And we know from data that when a state makes this mandatory, that we get much better much better impact when doctors are required to look at this database before they write a prescription. So that's just one example that states can step up their efforts on.
Let's go to our callers now. Bonnie is on the line in Brookfield. Bonnie, hi.
Hi. Yes, I have a daughter. She's over a year clean, and I also go to a Narnon group for parents of addicts. And I want to know, how is this bill going to affect insurance companies, which really hold a lot of control over whether the addict is going to get the treatment that they need, especially the medications and so forth, because there are nightmares that I could tell you of other parents and things that they've gone through.
Bonnie, good luck to you and your daughter. Becky, how would this affect insurance companies?
Bonnie, that's a great question, and it's a great point that I hear often when I'm traveling around the country. We do have parity laws already in place that require insurance companies to treat this just like they would treat any other medical or surgical issue. Sometimes those laws and regulations are not being enforced, and we see that very often. It often takes insurance commissioners to step in, or even attorney generals sometimes. But it's difficult for the patient or the patient's family to necessarily challenge all this all the time. This particular bill, again, emphasizes the need for enforcement for those parity laws. It doesn't directly address those issues because, again, we do have the laws on the books. But it is something that my organization and many organizations are continuing to push for stronger enforcement so that insurance companies are doing what they need to do to address this job, because they have a part in this and a role in this too, as you so aptly pointed out. And congratulations to your daughter, and I hope she has the support she needs so that she can maintain that recovery. Congratulations to you for finding ways to take care of yourself.
Bonnie, thanks a lot, and again, good luck to your family. Christy is with us next in La Crosse. Christy, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Christy?
Well, I work in a building where I work for a different company, but in the building there's a needle exchange. And so we see a lot of people come in, addicts come in, and just last week someone OD'd in the bathroom. And luckily, I mean, he was turning blue, but luckily he was saved. We got the police there in time and the medics, and they did the Narcan, but there's a lot of conflict in our office about the needle exchange. And, you know, originally I think it was supposed to provide, public safety and not having needles all over the place and a place for people to turn in their needles. But
Christy, I gotcha. Becky, how does needle exchange fit into the public health effort?
No, it's actually a very important part of this. It's referred to as part of what we call harm reduction, because very often when people who have these addictions, they obviously often can't afford a clean needle or have access to a clean needle. By reusing needles over and over again, we end up with the spread of many other things like hepatitis C and HIV. So these are ways not only to help reduce the harm, but every time a person comes in for a needle exchange, it gives us another opportunity to intervene and see if the person is ready to get some help with their addiction. So on two fronts, these programs are very important, and I applaud Wisconsin for having these programs available, because while it may feel uncomfortable to people in your building, this is very, very important that we have these. So again, we reduce the harm, but more importantly, it gives us many more opportunities. And very often a person will come in for a needle exchange and decide they really are sick and tired of being sick and tired and ready to get some help with treatment.
Christy, thanks for the call. We're talking to Becky Vaughn from the National Council for Behavioral Health, looking at opioid addiction and efforts to turn the tide. Morris is with us next in Eau Claire. Morris, hi.
Hello. Yes, my son is definitely an addict, and the law has not done anything to really help him. I mean, he has been busted multiple times. That doesn't deter him. The one thing that I wish they had was more things for rehabilitation. I wish he could go into the Army, the Navy, anything like that, because he does very well under a controlled circumstance, but get him out on his own, and he wants to do it. Also, it's an epidemic. He claims that at least 50% of the kids in his class have used. So it's bad. We need some help.
Morris, a big problem. And Becky, he makes me think people have talked about alternatives to incarceration, different kinds of courts for people dealing with addictions. Is that part of the puzzle?
Rob, it is part of the puzzle. And again, I'm so sorry in terms of what's going on with your son, because you're right. Once the brain has made this kind of change with these drugs, he's not making his own decisions anymore. This is a totally different arena for him. And what he does need, and no, being arrested is not going to deter him, because that's not what's going on. The brain is basically saying over and over again, I want more of that stuff. I want more of that stuff. Do whatever you need to do to get it. And so what will help him is if we can get him into treatment. And there are, in this bill, it talks more about diversion programs, of getting people into treatment. Again, unfortunately, even when we have law enforcement and criminal justice programs that are ready to do what they need to do, we have a serious lack of treatment capacity so that we can actually get people into treatment. But that is where the difference comes, when people can get the help they need so that they can begin to help their brain heal and get back to a much more productive way of managing this disease.
And Morris, I hope your son can find the treatment he needs. And Becky, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Rob, Veronica, both. I always appreciate any program, any media that's willing to put a spotlight on this issue, so that people begin to understand that when we treat this like a health issue, we can have some great success, and it means so much to individuals, families, and communities.
That was Becky Vaughn, Vice President of Addictions at the National Council for Behavioral Health, talking about the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act of 2016, signed on Friday. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. This is Central Time.